Hey, good evening, everyone. Great to be here again. Let's see what we can do in today's Parsha class. Parsha in my life class. Before we begin, just a little shout out to Janet Rasmussen. Rasmussen, I think that's how you pronounce your name. Who had given a generous donation in honor of the new system of the audio and video and camera. So that's beautiful. I thank you. And may some of the merit or the merit of this class and the classes that are going to be continue being broadcasted from here and reaching hopefully the hundreds, the thousands, the many people be to your merits for you, for all that you need and all that you want. And this is a reminder. I usually don't make an appeal, but it is a good thing. For all those who listen and enjoy these classes, we do are able to do the work here based on people's donations. And your contributions go a long way to help these classes develop. And we need money for production and for all the other wonderful activities that we do over here. There is never too much funds. And therefore, it's a very, very great thing. If you want to help bring Mashiach, which is what Mayan does over here in spreading Chassidus in general, and Mashiach consciousness, and Mashiach enlightenment, and joy, and depth, and meaning, and all the other good things, all the blessings that come from Mayan. So if you'd like to sponsor a class, just go to our website, Mayon, MAAYON.com, and look for the donate and use that to donate. Maybe we should add that to the YouTube page. It might be there. I don't even know. That's probably a good idea to put it on there. For those that are inspired, you can immediately go ahead and do that. And we appreciate it, and it helps us a lot, and it brings blessings to you. Okay, so let's go to the parsha this week. And I'd like to explore just something that, not too deep, not too abstract, and simple, but I think very soothing and comforting, and something that the Jewish people in particular need to hear these days. There's been a dark period, a difficult period of a few months, and of the horrific attack of October 7th, which no one can wrap their minds around. Just because my time passes doesn't make it easier. It's just, you know, we get sometimes a little busy with other stuff, but the pain is still raw and intense. And in addition to that, when you take a look and you see the rampage and the rampant anti-Semitism that is coming forth across the entire world. Instead of the world bending over backwards for Israel, the entire world to help Israel destroy a pure cancerous evil, a unimaginable, despicable evil. So many people in the world, even people who come onto this channel, have to put their ridiculous Free Palestine statements. It's absolutely insane. It's just pure wickedness and evil. And the Jewish people that have been through a hellish experience of thousands of years of persecution, while the Jewish people can stand proud and tall and talk about their enormous contribution to humanity on all levels of existence, and most of it yet to come, the moment Mashiach rolls out, and then the world will really realize what Israel, what the Jewish people did for humanity. And so not to worry for us. We're going to survive this. We're going to come out triumphant. We're going to come out strong, not just stronger than ever. We're going to come out with the ultimate prize, which is the coming of Mashiach, and everlasting joy and happiness, honor and respect from all of humanity, and the ability to honor and respect all of humanity in return, and to elevate all of humanity. We're not going to be destroyed by this. However, during the duration until the full Mashiach revelation, it can be painful. It can be painful to see the hatred, the inexplicable hatred revealed by so many people across the world, just with a irrational condemnation of Israel, when all Israel is trying to do is to protect their own communities and families from being butchered by monsters. And we see the atrocious tactics of the Hamas. What's even wickeder about Hamas is that they force Israel to kill innocent civilians because they actually are embedding themselves amongst innocent civilians. And then the question is, how many of these civilians are really innocent? Truth has to be told. Listen to the hostages reporting their stories of who was holding them captive. It wasn't Gazan militants, it was families, entire families of women and children that were holding hostages. So they're pretty much active participants in this violence, in addition to handing out candies when innocent people are butchered and murdered. So I'm not so sure about the innocence, but I'm sure there are some innocent good people, and at times they get hurt. And that's because Israel is put in a situation where they're not God, so they can't strike like God by the plague of by the firstborn, precision strike to kill only the one that deserves to die and no one else. They're trying more than any other army in the world ever has tried to eradicate only the cancer itself without anything around it. But when the terrorists are hiding in schools and hospitals and mosques and putting missiles and the most atrocious weapons in kindergartens, in children's bedrooms, amongst inside stuffed animals, it's like crazy. Sadly, it's humorous almost. It's unbelievable what this is. And then the world stands by Israel, trying to allow their citizens to have a peaceful night's sleep. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of citizens in Israel are not in their homes. They can't go back to their homes because rockets come, both in the north and in the south. And they're terrified. If Gaza is not cleansed from this terror organization, from this wickedness, how can you sleep at night when you don't know if tomorrow, out of nowhere, a tunnel can pop up and a group of terrorists can walk in and do exactly what they say they are planning to do? And that is exactly what they did last time. Exactly. How in the world does the world have the nerve to tell the Jewish people after 70 years ago, when the Jews came out of the gas chambers and the stoves and the ovens in which 6 million were cremated and burnt and gassed to death? So we have in a collective memory unbelievable suffering. And guess what? We don't sit and whine and blame the whole world all day. The Jewish people stood up from the ashes and built up built themselves up, not crying victim all day, but actually went ahead and did things to build themselves up, to be successful, to become the superpowers of generosity, of kindness, of philanthropy, of innovation, of everything. Unbelievable. And yet when it reoccurs, a mini Holocaust in the most wicked way, being filmed by the people who are doing it, so you have the evidence, and yet the world chooses. When I say the world, I mean literally millions of people who choose to side with barbaric monsters, bloodthirsty monsters, instead of saying, we're here to help, to sit and accuse and point the pointing finger. How dare South Africa say Israel is committing genocide? Shame on them. So let's see a little bit about Torah sources this week in the Torah report. So of the comfort that the Jewish people should feel during this challenging moment. Perhaps there's a moment that we can get some comfort and see what is really going on. And we will now see that this has all been predicted thousands of years ago. It happened once and it's happening again. Exactly. The script is there exactly like it was. Shouldn't shock us. And we're going to see the deeper reason of why this is this way. Are we going to have an explanation to understand? We can't understand pain and suffering. We don't have an explanation, but at least we know that we were foretold. And we know that this is not just another episode of suffering, but rather this is the way redemption comes to the world. As difficult as it is to comprehend. And the reason I'm talking about it this week is the story of the Exodus. This week we begin the story of the Jewish people being enslaved in Egypt. And God selects his Mashiach, his Redeemer, this first Mashiach, who was Moses, to redeem the Jewish people from Egypt. And when we take a look at the story of the Egyptian redemption, we find that the redemption came about in a way that first Moshe comes in the name of God, tells the Jewish people that the redemption is about to come. The Jewish people are excited. They receive the Bsura Tova, the good news. Their hearts are filled with hope, but doesn't last for long. Because when Moshe goes to Pharaoh, Moshe and his brother Aaron go to Paro to deliver the message that let my people go, Paro responds in a way that you wouldn't expect that he should respond to God's agents. In other words, if God wants something done, it should have been effective. And here it's the opposite of being effective. Not only don't they manage to start the process of redemption and to get the Jewish people out of Egypt, or the repercussions of that first meeting between Moshe and Pharaoh brought a intensification of the exile and a increased darkness and suffering in which it became, if it was bad till then, it became unbearable. That's the conclusion of this week's Torah portion, Parsha Shemos. So much so that Moshe approaches God and Moshe cries out to Hashem and he says, why have you done bad to your people? Lama hada oisalam azat. Why have you sent me? You haven't saved your people and you've only caused more pain and trouble. God answers Moshe in the last verse of this Torah portion, Parsha Shemos. God says, Atotira, now you will see. Be patient. I know it got bad. Now you will see. Let's see the actual words. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Atotira, now you will see. Asher ese leparo, that which I will do to Pharaoh. Ki biyot chazaka, because with a mighty hand, Yishalchem, he will send them. Ubiyot chazaka, with a mighty arm, Yigarshem e'archa, he will drive them out of his land. So God says, patient, Moshe, you're complaining. I hear your cry. I hear you. But just bear with me. Bear with me. We have to understand the answer. Moshe's saying it's not fair. Maybe it's better that I didn't go. Now it got worse. What's going on? And God kind of says, now you'll see. Was God saying, okay, we misfired the first one. I'm sorry. I wasn't tough enough on Pharaoh. I didn't arm you well enough to take him down. But now I'm going to strengthen you even more. I'm sorry for the lack of performance on the first time around. Can't say that. What does God mean? Now it's going to work. Now you'll see. And the next Torah portion, we actually see next week's Torah portion that the 10 plagues begin. And we start causing Pharaoh to crack. And actually by the first plague already, the Jews stopped, the labor camps were shut down. The Jews didn't have to work anymore. So they weren't allowed out of the land yet, but there was already a diminishment of the exile. But first, it becomes very, very bloody and very dark. So, and as the verse describes, what happened was the Jewish people had quotas that they had to build every day, but they were given throughout all the time, they were given the materials they needed in order to build these bricks and whatever, make the bricks and then build them. However, when Moshe came to Pharaoh and started speaking about the Jewish people going into the wilderness and serving God, Pharaoh gets angry and he says, not only am I not going to send them, the reason you're asking such requests is because you have too much time on your hands. You have time to dream of vacation. It's because if you're really working hard, you're not dreaming of vacation. You're dreaming of vacation? That means you're not working hard enough. So you know what? I'm going to withhold the straw. They used to make, through straw, they would build, make the cement and mix it with earth. And then somehow you make cement, which you use for the bricks, or you use the straw to build the bricks. I'm not exactly what they did with the straw, but somehow like that, they mix it in and that becomes the material of the bricks. I'm not going to give that. So they're going to have to go themselves and gather the straw. Now, gathering straw for bricks can take a half a day's work. But Pharaoh said, well, I'm not going to minimize from the expectation. The quotas that were up until now, the amount that each person needed to build, which was a full day of work, now they somehow needed to get it done in a half a day's work because the other half of the day, or a nice couple of hours, they had to go seek around to find the materials, which obviously made them be deficient. Number one, they worked like crazy harder to get it done. But even with the most efficient and diligent work that they did, they could not finish the quotas. And because of that, they were being beaten viciously. And we know what the Midrash tells us, that whenever there was bricks and that were not filled, so the Egyptians had a simple solution to teach the Jews a lesson. They would take a human being and build him into the wall alive. And obviously, he didn't live too long when you were cemented into a wall. And basically, they took the person's own children and built them into the walls. And imagine this kind of suffering. Imagine such atrocity, such unbearable pain. And this is what Moshe cries out to God. Why is this going on? And God says, now you'll see what's going on. So the commentators talk about this. Commentators talk about it. And let's begin with the Kliokar. Okay. The Kliokar is one of the interesting commentators that we have on Chumash by a rabbi who lived. Let me see when he was. I think he was a 16th or no, he was a 17th century scholar. His name was Pick them up in the front. Shlomo Ephraim Luntinschitz. Any case, in his commentary, he says these words, very, very interesting words. He explains what Moshe's, he felt that Moshe was upset at God because Moshe said that Moshe had a speech impediment. And as a result of that, Moses felt that he's the wrong messenger. And he actually derives from the words that Moshe felt that from what enraged Pharaoh was that Pharaoh felt that God sent him a misfit of a messenger. And it was the very fact that someone who stuttered and someone who can't talk normally and has a non-clear communication, Pharaoh felt that that's making fun of him. And that's what enraged him. He learns it in the words, Lama Moshe va'aron tafriyo esa'am. Why is it that Moshe and Aaron are disturbing the people from their work? He says it should have said, Moshe va'aron lama tafriyo. Moshe Aaron, why are you disturbing the people? That would have fit more. He says to them, Moshe and Aaron, what are you doing? Lama tafriyo, why are you stopping the people from building? The fact that it puts the word lama, Moshe va'aron, means that what really ticked Pharaoh off, he says, if someone else comes to Bob, at least you can talk. But here you have people who can't even talk like normally, and you're coming to me poke. It's disrespectful. So Moshe comes back to God and he says, I told you so. Didn't I tell you that I'm the wrong guy? Moshe was blaming the failure on the mission on the failed messenger. So God tells him, no, this is not a failure. This is according to plan. It's supposed to be this way. I knew it's gonna backfire. But realize that it's not really backfiring. Understand what's going on. So let's read what the Kuliokar says. Kima Hayadua. Look at these words. Shakahu Amida. This is the measure. Shabachol Yoim Samuch La'aloisa Shachar. Every day close to dawn, Hachoshech Machshech Bi'oiser. As it gets moments before dawn, before the day starts, the darkness gets darker. The darkest moments are the moments before dawn. Min Cheshchas HaLayla, from the darkness of the night. V'achakach, and afterwards, Oir HaShachar, the light of the morning, Boikea V'Oila, blasts forth and rises. Chayin, and so too. Interesting. Here is a negative example. This is a positive example. He's going to give a negative example, but the idea is still the same. That something before it ends, any entity before it ends, becomes very strong. And it flexes its muscles before it goes kaput. So where he wants to go, what he wants to do over here is he wants to explain how evil, the seconds before evil completely is destroyed, it appears to be very strong. And therefore it does its most atrocious things. He says, so too most people that are ill, a lot of times you see find people that are sick, that are on their are very ill, that's very close to their actual passing away, they kind of like pop back. And as if it, and you, and people, sometimes the family members are kind of deceived to think that, oh, things are good. We have a lot of stories that people, right before they pass away, they sent them home from the hospital. And then the next day, oh, God forbid. So it's not a happy example, but it is an example. And Mischaskim V'yoshvim Alamita, he says, sometimes you have people that are very sick. Before they pass away, they sit up on the bed. They ask food. And afterwards, the illness, you know, reasserts itself, and our mother's goyver and the death overcomes them, and they pass away. The same is also in the winter, he says. He's going to bring us back to mourning, but this time a winter mourning. It's cold, especially at night. It's colder than by day. When is the coldest moment of the night? Right before the sunrise. It gets really cold. Samach la'aliyas ha'shemesh, before the sun rises, ha'koir hoylech v'goyver. It dips, the weather dips, and it gets colder. And then when the sun rises, the warmth, it comes warm again. And then the cold gets beaten by the warm rays of the sun. And he says these words, v'zeh dover tivi, this is a natural phenomenon. Ki kol dover tivi ha'margish abo kenegdoi ezer dover hefchi. Every natural phenomenon, when it feels that something is coming to oppose it, something that wants to oppose and nullify its existence. When any entity feels that something is coming to negate it and destroy it or eradicate it, puts up a fight. We learned a long discourse about that just a little while ago, about what was called the final battle. Something like that. Over there, we discussed how when you start praying and the animal soul feels threatened, it starts to fight back. Same idea. But here, it's when something is ready to be destroyed. Then it strengthens itself against its opposition. It refuses to surrender. Seconds before, it will be completely destroyed. Listen to the news. Listen to Kim Jong-un talk about how powerful he is. He's threatening now to destroy the United States of America and South Korea with nuclear weapons. It will never happen. God is going to protect us all from nuclear weapons and so on and so forth. But then it's probably because evil is going to be removed from the earth any second, including an evil dictator like him who's causing millions and millions unimaginable suffering to the people of North Korea. It's not normal what kind of suffering, hunger, and pain these people go through. And because of this, literally because of this vicious, evil person, seconds before he's gone. And when I say seconds, I don't know if it's seconds or if it's minutes or if it's hours, weeks, or months, I'm not exactly sure, or years, but it's not long, it's not years. No, not yet, I'll take that back. We're dealing with something very, Mashiach is about to come. Evil is going to be eradicated from the world. So it shouldn't be a surprise to us that Kim Jong-un is making a lot of noise now, right? As he says, V'yamon lanas mipon of opoyol b'tivoy, and he naturally affects kol ha'shayimtza b'koychoy lifol. What happens is that which is going to be destroyed gathers up every iota of energy that it has and tries to like display it as this is its power. And then it gets destroyed. Because the force that's coming to take it down prevailed over it. So it is in all the things that we mentioned. So the same is also true. Mashehera Paro Le Yisrael. This that Pharaoh showed his most vicious, cruel side. His most is the evil peaked right before the redemption. And actually it lasted for a couple of months. The Jewish people were in this suffering, we'll soon see, for a couple of months. He hurt them now more than what he did to them until now. God is saying, relax, Moshe. I know it's painful, but this is a sign that his end is very, very close. And the time of the redemption is close. To nullify him completely. All of his activities, all of his wickedness of Pharaoh. And he senses it, and he knows it. Al came before, who roitzeli his chazik bepuloisav. He wants to strengthen himself in his wickedness. And this is why God says, atotira, now you will see. How, what do you mean now you will see? The sign we were waiting for is exactly the sign of this act, this extra evil, this extra moment of darkness. This itself is a sign that it's going to be destroyed. This is the Kliokar's explanation. Now I want to take this a little bit into the world of Hasidism on a more spiritual level. It's something that we studied last week Thursday night. Last week Thursday night in the class, we learned a discourse over here, a Hasidic discourse from Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi and Shir Hashirim and Song of Songs. And in the end, even though it wasn't on the subject of redemption, yet in the end he talks about the redemption. And he brought forth this scene, this theme, how before a great light, every period of great light is preceded by darkness. And moments before the light, the darkness intensifies. Same theme. But he's going to give a, but he, in the words of the Alter Rebbe, we're going to see what's the reason for that? What's the inner spiritual reason for that? Godly reason for that? So I'm going to mention two places the Alter Rebbe talks about this. The first one is in Torah Or. This week is the yard site of the Alter Rebbe, coming up on Thursday, the day of his passing, Chav Dalet Teves. But we are now going to take a look in Torah Or. This is his book of his Hasidic discourses on next week's Torah portion, Parshas Ve'era, Daf Nun Vav Amid Dalet, or page 112. Over there, he explains that the revelation that God is telling Moshe in the next Torah portion, God says, I appear to the forefathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob with stunning revelations, but it can't compare to what I am about to reveal by the giving of the Torah and by the exodus of Egypt and by the splitting of the sea and by the giving of the Torah. It's going to be outstanding revelation. And anything that I revealed until now is considered peanuts compared to what I'm about to reveal. And the Alter Rebbe there learns that that's the answer that God is answering Moshe's question, why did it get dark? Because preceding every revelation comes a darkness, like in creation. First there is evening, and then there is day. Vayere vayiboker. Always evening, always a darkness comes before a light. And this really is an explanation on the entire exile. It's not like first it's dark because God is angry and he's upset and God is miserable and everything that's going on, and that causes him to God forbid, you know, wreak havoc on the world and punish us and bring suffering. And then one day, you know, God's mood changes. He has a change of heart and he decides, okay, enough. Time to make nice again. Time to be sweet again. Time to be lovely. That's not what exile and redemption is. On a much deeper level, it's never about the exile. It's never about the punishment. It's never about the darkness. It's whenever God wants to descend and invest himself and reveal himself on a deeper level into the creation. The more God wants to manifest in the world, the greater the download that is about to happen. It always has a retraction before it. Because the system of all divine energy goes in a system of ebb and flow. Ebb is meaning a retraction. We call it sometimes Ratzai Vishuv, racing out, racing inward, where the energy races upward and it's released back outward. Or in the words of the Alter Rebbe over here, a higher type of phrase for that the Zohar uses, Mati V'loi Mati. It arrives and it doesn't arrive. The non-arriving meaning, the godly light retracts inward. Or we might, and then it flows outward. It's like the idea of inhaling and exhaling. In order to blow out, when a person wants to really, really, really blow out forcefully and exhale a whole lot of air, you first have to take a very, very, very deep inhale. You inhale very deeply, fill your lungs with the air. Where is the oxygen and the air going? Deep inside, away from the outside, into self. And then when you fill your lungs, then you can blow it out very strong. So when God wants to reveal something for outward into the world, he first pulls the energy, sweeps the energy up, 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 sucks the energy into himself. That and therefore by the recipient, by the world, it gets very, very dark. So the entire exile is really a process of an inhaling before the exhale. However, within the exile itself, there are phases. And as you're getting to seconds before the revelation, as dark as it was, it gets multiplied darkness. And it gets very difficult. Let's read it inside. I'm going to read you the Alter Rebbe's words. Achinei k'dei shiyeh b'chinez zu b'gilui b'matan Torah. In order there should be such a spectacular revelation by the giving of the Torah. The Alter Rebbe is explaining, the revelation of the Tetragrammaton, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, God himself, not through the filters of the name of Elohim, which is a filtration of the divine, where God filters himself through the forces of nature. And over here, in order there should be a revelation of God not filtered through the forces of nature, but a pure miraculous revelation of God as it was by the going out of Egypt and as it is in the Torah, first there needs to be a withdrawal, lamaila, above. In other words, the light first retracts higher. Because its root above is in the level of it arrives and it doesn't arrive, which means it retracts into himself. It goes out, but first pulls back in. Or what it says in the book of Ezekiel, and the energy races and returns. In order for the energy to go out, it has to first pull back in. Now, ukifi erach hashuv begiloi she'achakach, and it's commensurate. If it's a small revelation, it's a small concealment. If it's a big revelation, it's a bigger concealment. When we say bigger, it can mean on many levels. It can be more painful, more godless, more ferocious, but also a longer period of time. So it depends on what kind of revelation. So if an equivalent to the what is going to be revealed later, that's how much the energy is going to retract first. It's like if you want to blow a little bit, then you have to inhale a little bit. But if you want to really blow up a tire, you really, 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 really got to take in the air very deep in. And that's the reason why there was first the time of the exile, v'shlitas Mitzrayim, and the dominion of Egypt, me'estalkus achayos l'mayla, because the energy of God retracts above to be revealed only above creation, not within creation. Within the creation, there is no godly revelation and presence. Now, it's interesting. I'm not going to go explaining the next piece. I mean, I'm not going to read it inside. I will try to explain a little bit. And what he explains is that when the energy of God is in a state of withdrawal, which means it is above revelation, above the world, it's at that time the forces of evil are able to access it. When God's light is manifest in the world, evil is terrified. They run. They can't plug in. But when the energy is in a state of withdrawal and it's above and it's aloof, it's somehow the forces of darkness, the dark side, have more access to it than the holy side. And that's why he says, amazing thing. The sages say, the reason why Mount Sinai is called Mount Sinai. Interesting. Why is it called Mount Sinai? So the sages say, because the moment God gave the Torah to the Jewish people on Mount Sinai, antisemitism seeped in to all the nations. And from that day and onward, the people, nations in the world hate the Jewish people. Sinai is from the word sin, Hebrew word sinna. Sinna means hatred. The Jewish people have been despised through millennia and centuries. It primarily started at Sinai, even though Pharaoh was no less of an anti-Semite, but it didn't affect the entire world. But at Sinai, the hatred went into the bloodstream of the entire world, like a natural phenomenon. Why? What's the relationship? What's the? It's not total madness, and it's not just envy. Through the Torah, which was given at Sinai, God is given a channel to reveal himself within the world. Now, through the channels of revelation, holiness is the primary recipient of the divine energy, and the unholy receives only from the leftovers. The dark side receives from the leftovers. However, when God doesn't have a channel into the world, and therefore his energy and sustaining life force enlivens and sustains the world, so to speak, from the outside, it's above the world, it's above the internalization of the world, then it's the opposite. The holy channels are not meant to receive from the lofty light. And therefore, the unholy, the forces of darkness, have a preference over holiness. And therefore, the 26 generations, 2,400 years, but it was 26 generations from Adam until Moses. First 26 generations, there was no channel of revealed godliness in this world. Those that were evil, that which was bad, that which was unholy in the world, had a much greater chance to receive, had access to enormous flows of spiritual energy, which is the source of all material blessing. Here come the Jews. The Jews. Here come the Jews. And they come to Sinai. God gives them the Torah. And they change the entire dynamic. They start bringing God's energy into the world through a revealed and open channel. Suddenly, all those who had access to funding got shut down. And they got to get onto the back of the line. And now we can understand why Sinai brought hatred to the Jewish people. Ultimately, it's for the good, because as godliness is revealed in the world, we can repair the world, fix the world, and make the entire world the ultimate dwelling of God, and then the world will receive infinite blessing for everybody, and it will be way better than it ever was. That you have to be patient. And you have to be willing to forgo the temporary setback. So when God inhaled before the revelation at Sinai, when he took the energy further up, further removed from the world, he was bankrolling the Egyptians. And that's why the Egyptians were so powerful then. Evil was so enormously strong because of the inhaling of God, because of the withdrawal of the energy. And now God is telling Moshe, seconds before the revelation, seconds before the redemption, I inhale even deeper So it gets even darker, and Pharaoh and the pharaohs of the world get super powerful. And they think they can do whatever they want and defy me completely. But you just wait. This is an actual sign of the powerful, forceful divine revelation that is about to happen any second. Because I'm at the peak of the inhale, God says. I'm ready to blow it all out. And that's what happened. Lefikach, I've skipped a bunch over here. It's a long passage. Lefikach, therefore, b'mido u'mishkol sh'ayetzarech li'ez gili alukus b'matan Torah, in equivalent to how much godly revelation was supposed to be by the giving of the Torah at Sinai, kacho yibchenes histalkus. Going back to the theme, that's to that degree there was a contraction of the light. Zman ha'golus, and the time of the exile. U'shlitas Mitzrayim, and the Egyptian dominion, 210 years. Redusha, not 210 years. And now he says something very comforting, but also painful at the same time. Elchein, and therefore gam begolus Edom. When it comes to the current exile, the exile of Edom, which is called the exile of Esau, who is the father of Edom, the Roman exile, which turns into the exile of the Jewish diaspora throughout all of the European countries and eventually in America and eventually across the entire world. And those who think that America is not exiling, even though America is a country of kindness. And on the one hand, you see America is always standing by Israel. Well, I will say something a little harsh. President Biden flew to Israel immediately after October 7th. Blinken was there every second day. Austin, Secretary of State, flew to Israel. Amazing support. Every day we're watching. Sadly, we watched. Shouldn't continue. More and more beautiful young men, soldiers, dying in Gaza. 107, close to between 170 and 180 soldiers. I'm not talking about those that were massacred on October 7th, but in the Gaza operation. Now, people might not understand that, how deep of a hole it makes in each and every one of our Jewish hearts when one soldier is killed. The Jewish people are one soul. You kill one, you're killing all of the Jewish people. That's how we feel it. You're killing a brother. You call it killing a sister. It hurts like hell. And every day we open up the news and see another two soldiers fall in, three soldiers. It's horrible. All that was not necessary. The United States tied Israel's hands behind their back and forced them not to stop the bombing in Gaza. Civilian deaths. If the civilians didn't want to die in Gaza, then they shouldn't be giving out candies. Everything was good in Gaza until they decided to come in and murder babies and put babies in ovens and rape women and kill and behead people and do all these atrocious acts. So don't start up and you'll live a good life. You're coming in, you're murdering people, you want back, and then you want to. So what happens? Had America, not the United States, not tied Israel's back hands, then Israel would do the job that they need to do, like any army would do. Any army would do. The United States Army as well. You don't send in your boys to get killed in a dangerous enemy. You first need a bomb and soften the enemy. Israel did it, but they had to stop because the United States doesn't allow them. Now you say, Israel doesn't allow them? They can still do their independent country. Well, they stop all the funding and they threaten all kinds of things. It's not easy to withstand the pressure. I'm not applauding Bibi Netanyahu as well. I think that he should have told the United States, go home, and when we're done in our operation, you'll come talk to us. Israel needed to act with much more strength than they acted. And we wouldn't see We would have had 30, 40, 50, God forbid, casualties. We would not have 172 soldiers, fathers, brothers. And you're going to say Gazans are dying? We did not bring this war upon Gaza. Gaza brought it on themselves. And therefore, they have to get the brunt of it, not the Jewish people. Bottom line, we didn't do it. That's the reality. This has to be said again and again and again. Any innocent person dying in Gaza, it's the Hamas's fault. It's their own fault, what they've been doing for the last, how many, in 2005, they gave them Gaza. Since then, billions of dollars were pouring into there. They could have built it up like Dubai. Gaza could have been the most beautiful beach city in the world, beach, an oasis. With the billions of dollars, Israel wouldn't have minded to let them build it up like crazy. That's what they want. Israel wants economic success for the Palestinians if they would allow it. But instead, they took all their money and purchased and accumulated weapons upon weapons and built cities underground for their terrorist organization. That's what they did with the entire money. It's unbelievable. And now our boys are getting killed. Because the United States tells Israel. So what I'm saying is the exile under the nations includes the United States of America. Butt out. The only thing you should be saying, Israel, I give you a free license. Do whatever you need. I'm going to say something that is going to cause people to cringe, but I'm going to tell it anyways. President Trump would do exactly that. He would tell Israel, go and fight these whatever until you're done. I give you full support. But we have this tragic situation in the White House. I'm not saying there hasn't been support. There was support, but half-hearted support and half is causing a lot of suffering. That's part of the exile. So he says, L'chein gam begolus Edom, so too in the exile of Edom, which hu arichas hagolus, the exile is very long, way too long. But this entire, imagine what the Alter Rebbe is saying. Hear the depth. If in Egypt God inhaled for 210 years, and then we had the revelations of Sinai, the revelations of the Egyptian, the miracles of the 10 plagues, and the bringing the Jewish people into the land of Israel, and all the tremendous divine glory that happened, God inhaled for 210 years. Imagine what kind of revelation is coming our way when God is inhaling for 2,000 years. That's what he's saying. So that there can be a revelation by the coming of Mashiach, it can be a divine revelation. Because during the giving of the Torah, we only heard the divine revelation. We didn't see it. By the time when Mashiach comes, we will see godliness with our physical eyes. For that revelation, there had to be a much greater concealment. Another example I gave to this idea on Thursday night when we didn't learn this discourse. This we learned a few years ago, many years ago. But the other discourse that I'm going to read from now, where the Alter Rebbe adds another point to it, we're going to see in a moment. Another example that I gave to this is the concept of there was a big earthquake in Japan today, I think a 7.6 earthquake, and they were warning of a tsunami. Because when there's an earthquake in the ocean, the earth shakes, it creates a movement in the water. And that shift in the water can cause massive crazy waves. But the way it works with the water, when you go to the beach, is that the waters by the beach go in and out, in and out. The tide goes in and out, in and out. when there is a massive buildup of enormous amount of water ready to crash into the sea, the tide recedes enormously. And as I mentioned, by the horrific tsunami that killed, I think, over 100,000 people or even more a couple of years ago in Indonesia what was the name of the other country over there? For different Asian countries, I forgot the name. There were so many people that were on resorts, and they woke up, and there was early morning, and they woke up, and they didn't hear the news, and they were just looking outside. They were amazed by the beach that suddenly, you know, they had hotels or resorts like right next to by the beach, but suddenly the water is like, you know, a mile up or 2,000 feet away. And they walked. It was like fun to go running on the beach, not realizing the danger that the reason why the ocean is breathing in is because it's about to exhale in a wave like one has never seen, a very dangerous wave, a killer wave. This idea gets dark before the revelation. So in here, in this discourse, the Alter Rebbe says, it's because in order to draw down from a very high place, you got to first pull in and then you can draw down. Some kind of godly system that it works that way. In the discourse that we learned on this past Thursday night, he adds a little something over there. Because when God inhales and withdraws the light, it creates by us down here a greater yearning and a greater openness. We feel the emptiness and we cry out. The crying out opens up the vessels of the recipients because we yearn so much for a little godly revelation. We yearn so much for a little godly love, for a little divine warmth. And that yearning opens up our vessels. So when the actual light is revealed, we have an open vessel. We have a broader vessel. Is what he says over here. And this is in Lakutei Torah. There's another book of the Alter Rebbe in Shir HaShirim, Daf Mem Hei, page Mem Hei. Here he says, "Ki neksiv ki meitzeischa me'eretz Mitzrayim erenu l'maflah." It's like the days we went out of Egypt, I will show you wonders. "U'hu kamoi b'chenas matan Torah." Just like by the giving of the Torah, the chsiv, panem b'panem dibur Hashem. By the giving of the Torah, God spoke to us face to face. Gilia lakus lamata b'chenas panem. Spectacular divine revelation. God showing us his face. What had to happen before that? There had to be a concealment, a hiding of the divine face. Golus Mitzrayim reish dalet vav shana. The exile of Egypt, 310 years. Kedei she'acha kach yocholiyas panim b'panim. In order that afterwards they should be able to be face to face. In other words, there had to be a concealment. That's the same theme that we learned earlier. The same is also in the destruction of the first temple and the second temple. Because God retracts above, b'pchinas Hester in a concealment. So till now, it's the same idea. But here he adds a few lines that he doesn't say in the first discourse that I mentioned earlier. V'hakavona behester upon him. What's the intention? There should be a greater excitement. Like an example of a father and a child. When the father hides from the son, then the child cries out with a desire to go up to his father. When the child is playing with the father and he's in the same room and the father is always present, the child is kind of like takes it for granted. Father disappears because the father is left. Child gets very scared and runs around. A little two-year-old, a toddler, where is my daddy? Where's my mom? And they start crying, that yearning, and that creates a deeper compassion and a deeper attachment of the parent to the child. And this is the desire of the father. Sometimes we forget that how much we want to be close to God. because we get caught up with the trivials of life. When God hides his face, that's when we remember how much we want to be close. And God wants us to want him, especially as it comes to the moment of the redemption. L'cheinu mistater, that's why he hides. I don't like to give excuses for suffering and pain, but the Alter Rebbe says this is the way it is. And you take a look in Israel, you see that's because of this. Again, I'm not excusing and I'm not saying that it's, we're not supposed to give reasons and explanations, but at the same time, we have to have something to chew on, something to hold us. So we see in Israel that how many souls were awakened to want to do a mitzvah, to want to connect to their Judaism, to their Jewish roots. We feel abandoned. We feel the darkness, especially when we feel the entire world dropping Israel. It causes a re-Jewification in the Jew, the new word I just made up. Jews rejuvenate in their Jewishness. Want to bond with Jews, want to connect more to God. They want to come to study, to learn, to... Okay, and now to conclude the class, I'd like to share with you something that I shared right after the October 7th. Right after the October 7th horrific events, I want to share with you a passage in Rabbeinu Bechaya, because the reason I shared it a few months ago, but because this is the current week, here it's very important to share this again. And this literally explains the anti-Semitism on college campuses across the world, the millions and millions of people who are turning against the Jewish people all over. And I know we have a lot of friends. I'm not saying that. And blessed are those who are reaching out to the Jewish people and supporting them. Blessed of the blessed. And I mentioned this in the earlier classes, God is looking at every single person, which side they're going to take in this conflict. And fortunate are those who are standing on the side of God, on the side of truth. And very, very sad to those that are mischoosing. But take a look at Rabbeinu Bechaya, who's a 12th century or maybe even 11th century scholar, commentator on the Chumash. And he says like this, and you should know, I'm not going to read in Hebrew because it's going to be too long. I just want to do it short. So I'm just going to read it in English. You should know that all the matters of this first of the first exile, which is the exile of Egypt, is also hinting to our current exile. He said this close to 1,000 years ago, maybe 800 years ago, 900 years ago, in which we are, the Jewish people are in servitude, we are in suffering under the dominion of the kingdom of Edom, which we discussed earlier, the Roman Empire, and its tentacles and its offshoots. And we are waiting for God's salvation. Like King David, upon him his peace, said in Psalms chapter 130, verse number 6, Nafshi Lashem Mishomrim Laboker, my soul waits for God like those who are waiting for the morning. If you're stuck in the forest at night and you're scared, you wait for the morning. You're looking up, where is already the crack of dawn? So too, Israel has been waiting for the crack of dawn. And it says twice, from those who wait to the morning, those who wait the morning. That means we wait and we wait again. Because there are times that we think the redemption is about to come and it didn't come and we wait again. Jews have been awaiting the redemption for already a very long time. And if the redemption tarries, if it takes a little longer, If it delays, it's only to increase the incredible goodness and the incredible reward that's going to be at the end. And to do unbelievable good in the days of Mashiach. And to increase the punishment for those who participated in the persecution and in the suffering of Israel, of the Jewish people. And then he adds, and he says, very powerful. And just like we found that right before the redemption, the oppression became much stronger in Egypt. And when did it happen? After the Redeemer came. In other words, God sent already the Redeemer. And the Redeemer already revealed himself and told the Jewish people the time of redemption has arrived. And after he was already sent to Pharaoh, and he told him in the words of God, send out my people and they will celebrate for me in the desert. And after all of this, the enslavement, the workload was increased. And it was aroused, here's very important words, it was aroused upon them, upon Israel, upon the Jewish people, on the Hebrews of the, right? It was aroused upon them a greater hatred, much more than what was until that time. Meaning Jews were beaten, Jews were called names, there was graffiti, they wrote Hitler on the walls, something like that. Hey, when did I lose it? So it's just a camera that went off. Maybe it's lacking a charge. Maybe it's lacking a charge. Okay, we have audio. We don't have video. Hey, no, let's see star cam. Why did it go dark? No, what I think happened, I'm sorry. I think what happened is that we're using a new charger. Maybe it's not working well enough. Hold on, let me see something. Yeah. Okay, so there is a camera now on, but it's the computer camera. So I'm sorry for the vision is not as good, but let's finish the class. Let's finish the class. Let's finish it to the end. So the hatred became much stronger. So too in our redemption. After the final Redeemer is going to reveal himself. And you know my opinion about this, that this happened already 30 years ago, in which the Rebbe said that Mashiach is already, it's not my opinion. The Rebbe said Mashiach is already revealed in the world. And when the Rebbe says something, it's absolutely true. So the Redeemer was already revealed in the world in 1991, 1992. What's going to happen? Tis'oired ha'sina b'ino umos li'Yisrael. There's going to be a hatred awakening amongst the nations to the Jewish people. The yosifu shibud al shibudam, and they're going to oppress Israel and the Jewish people more than ever before. What happened in 1993? Oslo Accords. And world pressure started mounting on Israel to make deals with terrorists. And these led to literally bloodbaths and unimaginable pain and suffering. 1,000 people were blown to pieces during this intifadas that came because of the nations of the world pressuring Israel to make peace knowing in the first hand that Arafat is not interested in peace. It's pure anti-Semitism. That's what it is. And it was one thing in 1993. What are we watching now across the world? In London, in Paris, in New York, in Los Angeles, across the world. Literally, what's going on? This is what was predicted. After Mashiach is here already and was already revealed, there's going to be a period where Mashiach is concealed, as he says later. And during that period, there will be a lot of suffering and a lot of concealment and a lot of anti-Semitism. And he continues, and the Redeemer will be revealed, and then he will be concealed from them. And what's the purpose? In order to deceive the forces of darkness in the world, the nations who believe that they can still avoid the coming of Mashiach, obviously subconscious, to deceive them, to think that, the license has been given to do with that the defender of the Jewish people, the Rebbe was the defender of the Jewish people. He said, well, if the Rebbe passed away, you know what, you can do whatever you want. To strengthen their hearts. That's what we find by the redemption of Egypt, that Moshe was revealed and then he disappeared. And then he came back again. So it will be with the ultimate Redeemer. He's revealed, he is concealed, he will come back again. Because this redemption is going to be like the redemption of Egypt in many ways. And like it says in the verse, like the days you went out of Egypt, I will show you wonders. The Kasha Yiskare Vakates, when it will come very close to the end time. He has these words, painful to read, but this is what we're witnessing. Tiena tsarois rabois umischaskois. There's going to be a lot of troubles and a lot of intensification of problems. Vuhu simen haYeshua liYisrael. And this is the sign of the salvation for the Jewish people. The sign that that Mashiach is about to come is what we've witnessed in the last couple of years. So we need to strengthen our hearts to be certain and know that the darkness is momentary now, and the greatest joy and the greatest happiness is about to come upon Israel and from Israel to the entire world for those who support the Jewish people and support Israel and stand by. As the sages say, if you see a generation in which have waves and waves of suffering and problems, wait for him. That's when you wait for the redemption. This is the teaching of Rabbeinu Bachaya. So I think from all of this, we see quite a lot, an explanation on current events. May God have mercy on us that we've been through the worst. We don't need any more pain. We don't need any more suffering. We should already experience the complete redemption. And let that be now, now, and now.